Welcome, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to another interview on Small Caps Investment Research. We're very pleased to have Mr. Pierre Leveillé, the President and CEO of Deep South Resources, with us today. This is a very exciting time for the company, as it will soon start another drill round on its already impressive copper property in Namibia. The company is listed on the TSX Venture Exchange with ticker symbol DSM, and it is also listed in the United States and Germany. Pierre, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome.
I'm pleased to meet you.
As this is our initial interview, could you give us an introduction of Deep South Resources and its activities?
Yes, Deep South is a, as you said, an exploration company listed on the TSX Venture. We hold a very large copper porphyry in the south of Namibia, which is called Hybe Copper Project. It's a large tonnage, low-grade porphyry copper deposit. We're talking here about 850 million tons of ore in for about 0.31% for about 5 billion pounds of copper in the ground. So it's and it's from surface, so it's you know, there's no overburden, so it's very you know, open pittable and very low strip ratio. So it's a very large deposit that has the potential to expand the tonnage and improve the grade also.
Well, that's excellent. Now, let's first focus on your flagship property, the Hybe project. Can you tell us some more about its history and how you acquired it?
Originally, Deep South was a private Namibian company. In fact, I was the only foreign shareholder in the company. We applied for the license over the project in early 2004. We have been awarded by the government of Namibia, the by the Ministry of Mines, the license, the exploration license over the property. We applied for it because the license before was held by the same man since something like 30 years, if it's not more, and he deceased, and after a certain period of time, the ministry just, you know, took the license back and opened it again. And then from 2004 to 2016, it was developed in a private company, and we decided to list the company on TSX Venture in 2016. So that's the way we acquired it.
A few weeks ago, a preliminary economic assessment, or PEA, was published for the project. Would you describe some of the highlights of the PEA for us?
Yes, it's a very robust robust PEA. But before I enter into that, I must explain one situation. It's a low-grade project, so when we took over the project and when we started develop it on our own in 2016-17, we decided to look at what technology could extract the metal at low capex and low opex. It was very important for us because the classical route of extracting metal was to have a too high capex and too high opex to be profitable at a lower price of copper. Today, with a price over $3.50, it's different, but at the time, the price was lower. So we carried out some tests on bio-assisted leaching, heat leaching, which gave some very, very good results, up to 96% recovery with a constant recovery of 80 to 82%, easily attainable. So we decided then to produce a PEA based on that. And the bio-assisted heat leaching is not a new technology. It's something that is used in the world since over 50 years. In the copper space, it's mainly used by the major companies in Chile. So it's not extremely well known because its majors are not publishing a lot about their their technologies, but it's a robust technology, and it's extremely well adapted for the ore we have on that project. So based on the results we had on the bio-assisted heat leaching, we decided to do as a first step, to do a preliminary economic assessment, and we turned out with some very robust numbers. At a price of $3 per pound of copper, the NPV is for 20 million tons per annum throughput, the capex is $340 million U.S. with an operating expense at $1.34 per pound of copper. And that gives us a NPV of $957 million U.S. with an IRR of 30% after tax. If we go today, the price of copper is over $3.50. So if we go at $3.50, we have a $3.50 per pound of copper. We have a NPV of $1.3 billion U.S. with an after-tax IRR of 42%. It's pretty, it's very high. It's pretty compelling. And at the moment, the capex, the market cap of the company is just a little bit over 20 million Canadian. So it's we're very undervalued compared to the value of the project.
Indeed, very compelling numbers. Although the results from the PEA are already very impressive, it doesn't end there. As you plan to start a drill program at Haib shortly, what are the goals of this program?
In the center of the deposit, we have uncovered a 140 million ton area that hosts quite a lot of high-grade historical intercepts. So, and very long drill holes, 150 meter at 0.68% and 50 meter at 0.91. It goes like this up to 1.28%. So we know that there's high-grade material in the deposit. So the first goal is to infill drill that specific area, the high-grade area, to delineate it properly and define a precise average grade for that specific area. The idea is to have a measured resource over the area that eventually, that measured resource will also, with the average grade we'll have on that area, will also have an influence on the average grade of the overall deposit. So we will have to at some point in time, we will update the 43-101 resource estimation, and that will serve for a feasibility study to start right after that drilling program.
On top of all that, there's also the very realistic potential to expand the resource, right?
Yes. The resource at the moment has been estimated from surface to 350 meter deep. We have put down some drill holes in the past, down to 800 meters, and you see that it's still mineralized arriving there, and there's quite a lot of interesting intercept, very large and long intercept with high grade, over 0.50, between 400 meter and 650 meters. So what we know now is that we can, and arriving at 800 meter deep, it's still not the bottom because it's still mineralized. We don't know where it ends. So drilling deeper would probably enable to double the tonnage. And we have identified also five satellites around the main body, which have been identified by geophysical survey, and we've done some soil sampling and a little bit of drilling on the back of some budget, shallow, down to 100 meters just to see what's there. And we have the same type of mineralization with same type of grades. So who knows what we can add as tonnage over there. And one of them is very large. It's double the size than the main body. So it's very exciting for the future. It's not lined up for short-term work, but we know that we have a capacity to increase the tonnage substantially. It is already a pretty big deposit, but at the end of the day, it's a monster. It's a very, very large deposit.
Well, that's excellent to hear. Now, a final major growth driver is the copper price. Pierre, you have already been involved in the mining industry for many years. So how do you see copper developing in the coming quarters and years?
Difficult to put a price tag on it, but it's certainly is going to continue to grow. I would not be surprised to see it over $4 during 2021 per pound of copper, and even go over well over $4 in the coming years. A couple of reasons for that. First of all, the current production is of all the big mines in the world is reducing year after year. The resources are depleting, grades are going lower and lower. Structural problems also in some countries like Chile and Peru, where you know, unions want to have better work conditions, and it makes it difficult to have a regular flow of solid production. So production is going down, and there's not enough new project that will come and become mines and will be able to balance out the shortage that will come in the market starting in 2021. So that's one important fact. The other thing, why there will be a shortage, is because the demand is growing faster than the capacity of production, and it's growing faster because of the electrification of vehicles. Everybody has heard about that. You know, it's like an electric car will needs four times more copper than a gasoline car. But there's also electrification of all the other transport, you know, buses, trains, boats, vessels, and even airplanes. They're starting to test some electric engines for the airplanes. But there's also other factors, like it's one thing to to go electric, but you need charging stations, and only that needs a huge amount of copper. On top of that, you have all the countries in the world now that are focusing to improve their infrastructure, and we know in the States there will be massive projects come starting this year, to improve the infrastructure. So that will need quite a lot of copper. So, and the last point that people tend to forget is that there's some areas in the world where it's markets are growing extremely quick, and these markets will need a lot more copper than what we think, like the bitcoins, like cloud storage. All of this needs quite a lot of power facilities and needs a lot of copper. So, and these are markets that are growing extremely fast. So we estimate that up to 2027, at least, there will be a huge shortage of copper. Based on that, there will be a squeeze and the price will be higher. So we're in the right business for a certain period of time.
And where would you like the project to be 12 months from now?
We're starting a feasibility study on the project. So in 12 months, that will be about half of it. So that's or a little bit more. So we would like to have completed at least 10,000 meters of drilling, more metallurgical work with bio-assisted heat leaching, more high-pressure grinding roller tests. And also we would like to have assess the solar power to improve the numbers in the PEA. So what can improve the numbers in the PEA in the short term will be certainly the grade, if we can have a better grade, and we'll certainly have the recoveries on the heat leaching and also the solar power if we can use it. It's a very sunny part of the world. Namibia has 320 days of sun per year in average, and even in the south near the Hype Copper project, it's near 360 days of sun per year. So definitely it's like solar power is the way to go, but now we need to assess it to see, you know, if the CapEx and OpEx make sense with that type of project. If it's the case, then we will be we will have a project that is greener than what we think.
Another part of the beauty of the HAI project is its excellent infrastructure. Could you give us some more color on that?
Yes, the project is situated completely in the south of Namibia, just near the border with South Africa, about 25 kilometers from the border. It's 15 kilometers from the Orange River that makes the border between the two countries. That's provide, you know, all the water we need for the operation. There's the main commercial road crossing South Africa and Namibia, coming from Cape Town on the west coast, is crossing our license area, and there's a low voltage power grid along that road that we can use for the mining camp. The high voltage power grid is a little bit far, 85 kilometers to the east, and we have estimated in the PEA that we pay for all the capex to connect to that grid, but we know Namibia there's some program for that, and we expect that the government will probably be in for 50% of that. And if we can use solar power, then it will be a game changer. So we're not too far from Puerto Rico. The one that we could probably use best is about 300 kilometers. So not bad. It's fine. So in general, the infrastructure are very good in that area.
An important aspect of the Haib property is its location in the Republic of Namibia. How would you characterize Namibia and its mining history? And also, would you say that Namibia is a mining-friendly country?
Namibia is a highly mining-friendly country. It's one of the best in Africa. With Botswana, it's always ranked number 2 and 3 by the World Bank and the IMF as the best countries to invest in Africa. Number one is still South Africa, but South Africa has their own problems. But the size of their economy makes that they're still number one. And but in Namibia, it's extremely quiet, stable. Democracy is well established. Justice system is completely independent. And they're extremely supportive to the mining industry. They have their mining code is transparent. It's very easy for us to evolve into that. And there's a lot of mining that has happened in Namibia over years. The largest marine diamond mines operated by the Beers along the coast of Namibia are extremely big business for the country. Ruffing Uranium, operated by Rio Tinto, which is, if I remember right, it's the fifth largest uranium mine in the world. It's in operation since the mid-70s and still operate today. B2 Gold has a pretty large gold mine in the north. There's a certain number of smaller copper mines. There's also a two zinc mine near the Hyde Copper Project, one which is operated by Vedanta, but it's closing this year because the resources have been depleted. And there's the Rushpina zinc mine. So there's quite a lot of mining activity and extremely well supported by the government. And it's a very easy country to deal with. In our case also, which is pretty important to mention, is that two of our directors are Namibian, prominent, well-known Namibian individuals, and about 15% of the shares of the company are still held by Namibian people.
Also important, the company will soon be well capitalized, right, as you recently upsized a private placement to $4.5 million due to significant demand.
Yes, we're closing in 2 days, so that will be a good thing. So after the closing of that, plus the $2.4 million we have raised before in October, less some expenses that have had to be done, we will be sitting on certainly $6 million cash pretty soon. We're very happy with that because now we can move forward with the all the development plan we have, so we're very happy with that.
Okay, that's excellent news. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the other key executives of the company?
Yes. I'm not a technical guy. My background is finance. At the start of my career, I was a stockbroker and then an investment banker, specialized in raising money for exploration companies in the north of Quebec and Ontario mainly. Been CEO of listed companies since the end of the 90s to today, and most of the projects I've done in the past were all in Namibia, and I've raised and concluded transactions in Africa and financing and merger and acquisition transactions for over $100 million in the past 20 years. So it's I have a quite long experience of operating in Namibia. And of course, over the years, I became quite good at exploration and geology, even if I'm not, a geologist. Our chairman, Mr. John Akwenyi, is a Namibian retired lawyer. He has been in his career. He's sitting on the board of the Rushpina mine. It's PE Minerals, the company that holds the title. He has been involved in many mining ventures. He was also at one point of his career the chairman of the Namibian Airport Corporation. He's now sitting today on the Land Resettlement Committee. It's important because it's you're named there by the office of the president. So it's our COO, Jean-Luc Roy. He's an accountant by training, and he was he spent most of his career in managing mines and being mine manager or COO or a country manager for companies like First Quantum in DRC. He has worked also for large companies like Centamin in Burkina Faso. So he spent quite a lot of time on operations in mines in Africa. Our VP Exploration, Viv Stewart-William, is South African, based in Cape Town. He has 45 years of experience as a geologist, mainly in, I would say, nearly most of the countries in Africa. Did some work outside, like in Canada, Afghanistan, and places like this, but mainly it was Africa. Has a long experience in South Africa and Namibia. He has been a resident of Namibia for over 10 years. He's involved with the Hype Copper Project since the mid-90s. He was hired at that time by the company who was developing the project as exploration manager. So he has a very long experience with that and a very deep knowledge with that deposit. So in a nutshell, that's who we are.
And as a final question, what are the two or three most compelling reasons for a long-term investor to consider Deep South Resources today?
Well, the first thing is that we are extremely undervalued. So one way or the other, if we take the NPV at $950 million, we should trade between 5% and 10% of that value. Means that we should trade between 50 million and 100 million market cap US, and we're trading now at probably 17 million US. So there's a huge upside potential. Now that's with what we have in hand now. Now we will start spending money on the project with drilling, with more metallurgical work, with the HPGR, with the feasibility study eventually. So all of this will bring more added value all the time. You know, it's like there's a huge upside potential on the company. We are the right team to develop that project, so that's another compelling aspect. And we're based in Namibia. Namibia is a very good country for developing a project of that magnitude. Also, the last thing is that an analyst told me last summer that it's very rare you see a project of this magnitude advanced like it is in the end of an exploration company. In general, it's major companies that have that. So it's a pretty rare opportunity to participate into a very large deposit that is moving forward with development.
Fantastic. Pierre, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us, and we'd be more than happy to have you back for an update in the future.
Thank you so much.